This is The Guardian.
Hi Pod fans, Football Weekly is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small town Welsh football club has finally been promoted to League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu. Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly, our first chance this season to get nostalgic about the Carabao Cup box and look ahead to a weekend of Premier League action on the eve of the transfer deadline. Sheffield United get ready for the weekend by being dumped out by Lincoln at home, while their opponents Everton squeeze past bottom of League Two Doncaster. Could we see the worst football match ever at this level? Big game of the weekend at the Emirates as Arsenal host really need a left-back Manchester United. Ansu Fati-bound Brighton versus Newcastle also jumps off the page. Chelsea had to come from behind to beat AFC Wimbledon, a big enough scare for Todd Boehly to think about bringing in Ivan Toney, Cole Palmer, Joao Palhinha, the whole of Sporting Lisbon. They're up against Forest, who are clinging hold of Brennan Johnson. He might go to Spurs, who went out on penalties to Fulham. Reserve team Ange Ball is not as good as Ange Ball. There's the Mo Salah to Saudi rumour that won't go away, and Matias Nunes is on strike. Elsewhere, Rangers limp out of the Champions League to PSV, including a sensational no-look back pass own goal. There'll be much more on the French prophet Jean Le Baptiste. All that, plus your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Barry Glendenning, welcome.
Hello, Max.
Hello, John Bruin.
Hello, Max.
And hello, Lars Sivertsen.
Good morning, Max.
So look, let's look ahead to the Premier League games while sort of covering the games they played in the EFL Cup, if they did play in the EFL Cup. And we'll start with a basement battle, Sheffield United v Everton. Everton versus Doncaster last night looked very much like I was just watching like a Cambridge game on iFollow. It was just like there's not a Premier League team on the pitch at the moment, but they won it very late despite being pretty awful. Doncaster bottom of League Two, 1 point from five games. Sheffield United meanwhile lost at home on penalties to Lincoln after drawing 0-0. And actually from the intro, I stole Barry, producer Joel's line. Is this about to be the lowest quality game the Premier League has ever seen?
I'd say there's a lot of stiff competition and not necessarily competition featuring the kind of teams that Sheffield United and Everton are. It could be a very good game of football. Could be diabolically bad. Everton's win over Doncaster, I kind of fancied Doncaster, I guess everyone did a bit, but Everton prevailed despite going behind, actually scored two goals, so you know, you'll take anything you can get at this stage, so they're into the next round. I find it difficult to forecast how this will go. I was quite impressed with Sheffield United last weekend, and they have home advantage, and Everton aren't very good. So, yeah, I suppose you go for a Sheffield United win to further pile more misery on Everton. But, yeah, it could be a terrible nil-nil draw, couldn't it?
I mean, you think, Lars, Everton will be... Everton, I mean, they both need something. But just watching Everton yesterday, and, you know, by the end of the game, they had some, you know, they had quite a lot of... A lot of their first team were on the pitch, I'm pretty sure. And you think, God, this is pretty bleak.
Yeah, they did get two goals. So the magic of the cup is alive and well, it seems to be. You know, anything can happen. No, on a semi-serious note, I was watching Rangers PSV, to be honest, but watching the highlights and reading about the game, it seems like Beto, their big striker, came on and made a difference. And again, not having seen this game, but having watched him in Serie A a few times, he seems like a very sort of Sean Dyche-ian type of man. You know, he's quite big. He works hard. He's quite physical. He puts himself about. And I think with Dominic Calvert-Lewin having all these physical problems, not being able to stay fit, you do need a tall boy up front of some description for the whole Dyche thing to work. And I think him coming in How they've structured that deal, I don't know. From the outside, I would suspect not a lot of that money is up front. But they've managed to get him through the door. He's come on. He scored an important goal and made a difference. Yes, it was against Doncaster, but that's a positive thing. I'm looking for positives for Everton.
Yeah, you should. I mean, a tall boy, you know, the chest of drawers, a lot of Everton strikers could be compared to one of those in recent history. Yes, Beto, who is not the really amiable guy who keeps almost becoming the governor of Texas, signed from Udinese, a deal worth up to 30 million, scored 10 goals in Serie A last year, 6'4". And, I mean, he could be the answer, John. I mean, Neil Mopay came on again and kept having shots blocked. I was watching this game and I was more desperate for him to score than I was for Doncaster to win.
Poor old Neil Mopay. It's a common theme, isn't it? Yeah, from what I saw of Beto, he's fulfilling the hit Dom role that Sean Dyche needs. Let's hope, if he only got 10 Serie A goals, let's hope he hasn't used up one of his Premier League goals in scoring against Doncaster. The other goal was scored by Danjuma, I think it's one of those players that is a good player to have around if you're in a relegation battle, because he's a soloist and he is one of those players that can find some inspiration. Obviously, he was at Bournemouth a few years ago and was at Tottenham last season. And as the Conte regime started falling apart, Danjuma looked quite decent and up for it, unlike the rest of his colleagues at that point. And I think if you can keep him interested, he's the type of player that could spell some sort of, hope it is at this point, isn't it, for Everton already, after three matches of the season and only just beating the worst team in the league. I suppose, are we to say that this is the darkest hour before the dawn? Possibly not. Sheffield United against Everton. I agree with Joel's summation of this. It does look a very low-amped game. Let's see what happens.
We're saying last on Match of the Day, are we?
There's a lot riding on it, I think. So I think Brentford-Bournemouth has got that covered, is my guess. But look, you never know, yes?
Just going back to Neil Mopay, who I'm increasingly obsessed with.
Yeah,
and his inability to score. And I mean, you're right, it was interesting. He couldn't even get in Everton's second string lineup. Maybe there's a transfer looming in the next 24 hours or whatever. But
to Doncaster.
Maybe, if they'd have him. I just wonder if Neil Mopay is out now and he meets some girl who takes his fancy and she doesn't know who he is. Does he actually admit, I am a footballer? Or does he just go full Costanza and say, I'm an importer, exporter or something? Because if I was Neil Mopay and I told someone who didn't know me I was a footballer and they started asking me questions, I think I'd be embarrassed to pretend I'm a footballer at this stage.
I actually don't know the answer. I can't answer your question, but I don't have a definite answer to your question.
I may be being incredibly unfair on him, but his record is, you know, for a guy who used to be good, he's no longer can call himself a striker, really.
Well, he got 37 in 85 for Brentford and then 26 in 102 for Brighton. So he's sort of going that way. But Brighton famously, you know, were sort of XG, maybe down to him, just, you know, were creating more chances than they should have done. But no, they weren't scoring as many goals as chances they were creating. And then to Everton, he's fallen off a cliff. I guess the point being, Everton have not created any chances for him.
He does seem to miss a lot of chances.
Now, that's a good point, isn't it? Anyway. And actually, Barry, you make a good point about Sheffield United. They played really well against Manchester City. This will obviously be a very different game and they'll actually have the ball, you imagine, at times. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with it. Arsenal, Manchester United, neither in cup action this week. Biggest game of the weekend. It's fair to say, Lars, neither of them have had a particularly convincing start, but they both have like a decent number of points.
They do. The concern here is with Manchester United and their sort of increasing injury list. I mean, there's been some very bad news on that score, with Luke Shaw not being available, but Raphael Varane not being available. You're kind of running out of guys in defense a little bit, so that's a concern. I would worry more for Man United. than for Arsenal. And in this case, I think Mikel Arteta is kind of trying a few bits and pieces to see if they work better. This Mopay on the brain after all of that. This Thomas Partey at right back thing, which is not worked super well so far. It's interesting to see what's happening before the deadline closes, because I do think United have come around to the idea that they need to bring in another midfielder. Because after the first three games of the Casemiro Mount and Fernandes triumvirate, I still believe that that could possibly work. I think that would include that would involve Casemiro being more of a holding player and stop doing the box-to-box stuff that maybe he doesn't quite have the legs for anymore, and Mount needs to figure out his role. But could work, but you after three games, you really don't want to bet your season on it working. I think that's fair. So an effort to bring in Amrabat now to have an extra option in that midfield makes just a ton of sense, as far as I'm concerned. And we'll see what kind of team they have. I mean, well, for the Sunday, big thing to throw someone straight into. But certainly injury problems are a big concern for Manchester United.
Has Amrabat signed? I saw they were interested in Højbjerg as well, who would not inspire me, John.
No. I mean, the problem is that Manchester United's signings, as with a few clubs actually, this transfer window, where obviously the COVID winds have blown through and FFP has meant that clubs are rather more restricted than they'd like. So Højbjerg or Amrabat. Now, Amrabat in the World Cup, excellent. Højbjerg has a decent Premier League record, but and Jane having him, that's for sure. But and then you've got Cucurella as this emergency left back. Well, if that doesn't spell panic, I'm not sure what does. Of Chelsea's £1 billion signings, he's the one probably regarded as the grandest flop, would you say? I mean, because they did spend £60 million on him, and yet United are trying to do a deal because their left back crisis is so bad. Yeah, it's again with Manchester United, they always seem. That has been this thing that they always seem to panic late in the transfer window at the moment, or the last 10 years. And I think that's what we're going to see again. And, you know, you can expect protest from fans because the team hasn't delivered, the recruiting team hasn't delivered what the actual team on the pitch needs. And as regards Arsenal, those funny things that Arteta is playing around with, just say the Partey thing as a right back. Why? What's going on with Gabriel? There's some quite strange things going on there. I think early season experimentation, sure. But this is the Premier League where you've got a team, if you want to win the league, and that's Arsenal's stated ambition, you've got a team in Manchester City that are going to win every week, and you can't really mess around. And that Fulham performance was pretty poor. And I think the seeds of that were in, as far as I could gather, tactical confusion.
So if we're trying to sort of immerse ourselves into the mind of Mikel Arteta, I would sort of think, the hypothesis would be that the Partey thing is because he wants to play a sort of back four that becomes a back three with someone stepping into midfield, and Zinchenko hasn't been available.
I understand that, but it's not the right player, though. That's what.
No, I would agree. I mean, maybe Ben White, who's played as a holding midfielder before, and is a good sort of that would kind of make more sense to me. Yeah. I'm always hesitant of like when these incredibly smart managers who know all the tactics and all the things and see the players in training every week, when they decide something that I think looks absurd, I kind of don't like to sit here and contradict them because they know more than I do. But I'm kind of with Bruin on this. Having watched it for three games, I'm like, I don't see how the party doesn't look very comfortable. It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense.
When you wanted us to step into the mind of Mikel Arteta, did you want us to step outside of our virtual technical areas at the same time or not? Because it seemed a key part of when I was really channeling my inner Arteta. I wanted to upset Richard Keys at the same time. Barry, how do you see this game going?
I think Arsenal will win this comfortably. And I don't really have anything more to add beyond what the two chaps have said. I do see a comfortable Arsenal win.
All right. Brighton Newcastle, you said on the pod Monday, Baz, that a defeat against Brighton, the tide could start to brackets, slowly turn against Eddie Howe.
I think the tide slightly is turning already. Now, I'm only going on social media, so...
Okay, well, that's your first mistake.
Yes, but that's kind of all I have to go on.
You could get a train to Newcastle and talk to fans at the club shop.
I could, yes. And invariably, when reporters go to club shops to interview fans, Premier League club shops, the fans are start jabbering away in an Irish accent. So I could just go home.
They're always from Norway in Newcastle as well. That's,
of course.
Because it used to be a boat that went between the two. There's, yep, a lot of...
Been on it more than once.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
This is a fascinating game. Brighton obviously got beaten last week, but both teams got beaten last weekend. Brighton are at home. We know how good both teams can be, and we both know both teams are capable of shockers on their day. And both of them, I thought Brighton played well actually last weekend, despite getting a bit of a hiding. Newcastle had an awful day at the office when in their defeat against Liverpool. But yeah, going back to what I was saying, that on social media, where fans tend to be rather more hysterical than those who go to the games and live in the area, there does seem to be a bit of a Eddie Howe backlash, and that sense of entitlement that Newcastle fans have always claimed they don't have seems to be creeping in a bit now that they've got loads of money to spend and Mike Ashley is gone. And I think if they were to lose this game, there would be further murmurings of disquiet. They may well win. It should be an excellent game, and I'm looking forward to it.
Do you think Newcastle should play like West Ham played, Lars? I don't think they have that in them. But like that, West Ham did a job on Brighton, and that's quite a good thing to do if you want to win.
It is, and I think it was such an interesting tactical matchup that, because we know that what Brighton like to do is to tempt teams into pressing them, and then they have a way of getting through that press. And West Ham were like, well, good for you. We're just not going to do that, are we? We're going to kind of sit back. And they made it much more difficult for them to get through. Newcastle tend to play much more on the front foot, tend to want to get in the opponent's face and be aggressive. And you would think that that would, in a sense, play to Brighton's strength, in the sense that that's what Brighton usually want teams to do to them, so they can play through them. But of course, Newcastle they have quite a lot of aggression, athleticism, and ability to press. So it might be that they just stop Brighton's build-up. I mean, it's a very fascinating game. I do think with the Eddie Howe thing, there have been two games now where, listen, losing away to Man City by one goal is not a terrible result. Losing to Liverpool, you know, it can happen. But there were two games where you both kind of expected them to go for it a little bit more. You know, Man City, as you'll remember, were in that sort of situation where they'd played in the Super Cup in Greece, and Pep was all worried and they were tired and things were not good. And Liverpool, of course, went down to 10 men. So there were both situations where you thought, okay, Newcastle could really go for it here. Could go out and be aggressive and go for the jugular. And they were kind of, they were a little bit passive and safe and sort of meek in both games. And so obviously easier said than done. And very, very easily said from a comfy chair where I'm sat. But I was just kind of, lads, you're not a random mid-table team anymore. You're the sort of Saudi-backed Champions League team of the Northeast. Kind of expecting a little bit more in those situations.
Lars, can I ask you one more question, which is about Ansu Fati? Apparently Brighton are closing in on a deal with him, and Fati, you know, Deserby's been a key factor in Fati going there. What kind of Ansu Fati are they getting? Because presumably Barcelona wouldn't offload peak Ansu Fati to Brighton.
Yeah, so hopefully we'll have Sid on at some point to speak into more detail, but the sort of short version of it, I believe, is that he has been hampered quite badly by injuries to the point where he's not going to be starting too many for Barcelona, but he does seem to be a player who could do with a reset. Extraordinarily gifted, of course, as we remember. If he can stay healthy and can get games, then there's a tremendous upside there. And Brighton, obviously, playing very good football, increasingly developing a reputation for developing players and improving them, seems like a good place for him to go and to do that.
Luton play West Ham. Finally, we get to see the new and improved Kenilworth Road. They beat Gillingham 3-2 in the Cup. Scored a couple of absolute bangers in that game. Mark says, with both Luton and West Ham recently registering very low possession stats, will the ball just remain still in the middle of the pitch for long periods? It would be great. West Ham have certainly, I mean, Barry predicted them to get relegated. I did. I can't remember if you did, John, but you must be surprised with how well they started.
I took no part in this. No. Well, I was at the Brighton West Ham game last weekend, and David Moyes afterwards said often does this, is that he tempered, you know, the great victory by saying we could have played better football in that game. And while I agree, they played the right football for playing Brighton, which was, and this is the problem, and this is the problem we're facing West Ham now, that on the quiet, West Ham have actually got quite a good team. Particularly in midfield now. Edson Alvarez, is he the midfielder, Lars? Yeah. He looked really, really good. And he's like Declan Rice, except without Declan making those runs into midfield. They got to keep Paqueta for reasons that we probably shouldn't discuss too closely. He's an excellent player. Benrahma, a player that I don't think Moisey fancies that much, did supply that brilliant goal for Jared Bowen. And then you've got Antonio. And if Antonio is Mikel Antonio, as Mikel Antonio can be, then no one can stop him. So they're a really, really good team when they get on it. And remember, these are Europa Conference League. And that's a club that I've watched a lot of West Ham since I came to London 20-odd years ago. I've never seen a club so flush with confidence as it is now. The fans are really enjoying it. And despite the fact that there was this whisper that David Moyes might step away over the summer, well sourced, I'm told, Moyes is doing a good job there.
Yeah, I had them 10th in my predictions. I was kind of surprised that everyone was sending them down. Just because, yeah, there's some uncertainty there about the new recruitment guru and Moyes and does he get on, and it was all this stuff. But it's Bruin saying, at the end of the day, they have really good players. And I think the fact that Moisey appears to be going back to basics now. That's the impression we have so far anyway. Is that they had the failed experiment last season of trying to play a bit more football, and that didn't work out at all. Seems to be back to basics Moisey now. We're going to do low block. We're going to focus on transitions and set pieces and use all the sort of physical power that's in the team. Let's not forget that brought them league finishes of 6th and 7th before last season, right? They were a solid top half team for two seasons doing it that way. It might not be everyone's idea of how football should be played, but it's been working for them, and it's something they have the tools to do. You know, James Ward-Prowse is going to get like a ton of assists from set pieces and this sort of thing. I just think it'll be fine, and it'll tick along, and they'll get decent results most of the time.
And we're also not used to West Ham spending well. Because I think all of us, we know West, you know, as I said, I know West Ham. West Ham get money in the pocket, you think, oh no, where is this going? I mean, we obviously go back to the Rio Ferdinand money 20-odd years ago, but you just think, oh, they're going to waste this. And in James Ward-Prowse and Edson, they haven't. They've bought two really, really good players.
And Kudus in as well from Ajax, who's a really
Yeah, absolutely, player. Yeah. Well, again, the thing is, Max, we always talk about Kudus, and finally we're going to see him in the Premier League. This guy has been floating around the transfer market for years, and finally he should be made flesh in a Premier League stadium.
Absolutely right. And when he does his first assist, it can be kudos to Kudus. That's all we
want,
right?
Then
he may leave.
It's probably worth mentioning, Max, that Luton are playing in this match as well. And I just wonder, will the Kenilworth Road factor have any influence?
Because
I imagine it's a Friday night game. It's the only Premier League game on the Friday. I would say quite a few of the doyens of the football press box will be muddying their spats at Kenilworth Road, and we'll get lots of misty-eyed, possibly condescending match reports and sidebars the following day. As top flight football returns to this, hovel for the first time in 30 years.
Yeah, a massive moment for their fans, right? I mean, that is
of course, yes,
absolutely. The noise should be Maybe it will make a difference. We will find out, won't we? Anyway, that'll do for part one. More Premier League preview in part two.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Joe writes from Hamilton Island. I noticed on the graphics for the Football Weekly live tour that Max and Barry will be playing at the Royal College of Northern Music rather than the Royal Northern College of Music that they played last year. I presume this is because the College of Northern Music has a much bigger capacity to accommodate all the fans who missed out last time. But it got me thinking about what kind of things they teach at the Royal College of Northern Music. Do they have lectures on how to monkey walk like Ian Brown, seminars on how to dance like Bez, or just classes on how to be a total bellend like Liam Gallagher? I mean, some people like Liam Gallagher, of course. Anyway, good luck with the date and the rest of the tour. Thank you, Joe. Yeah, we are going on tour. 13th of November, we're in London. We can announce the lineups now. 13th, Ellis James, Troy Townsend, Philippe Auclair, join me and Barry. The 14th in Bristol, which is almost sold out, is me, Baz, Mark Langdon and Jordan Jarrett Bryan. Manchester on the 15th. John, you're coming to that, aren't you?
I am, yes.
Good stuff. With Nader Manuha and the Will Unwin anecdote. Wow, that's huge. 20th in Dublin is sold out, but the 21st, still a few tickets left for me, Barry. Lars, you're coming to Dublin?
Yep, 100%.
Okay, I hope you have a nice chat with that guy by the fruit machines. Like yes. Last time. Jonathan Wilson with us as well in Dublin, and then the 22nd of November in Brighton, Johnny Liu and Nikki Bandini. That the one is being streamed around the world. Go to theguardian.com/FWTour23. Unfortunately, the tickets are selling quite fast, so get in there while you can. We also have a book out, so I'm only fleecing you. I mean, I apologise, but if you could buy the book as well, that would be great. Guardianbookshop.com/football. Chelsea play Forest. They beat Wimbledon, AFC Wimbledon 2-1 last night to come from behind. Bring a few of the big guns on. They've got quite a favourable run, aren't that game against Luton they had. And they've got Forest at home. Obviously, Forest not very good away. Bournemouth, Villa, Fulham, Burnley. But still, Barry, the transfer rumours for Chelsea are sort of... I don't know why they're trying to get all these footballers. When they've got all these footballers. Emile Smith-Rowe, Ivan Toney, Cole Palmer, they've agreed a deal for. Apparently, they want Paulinho from Fulham. I mean, they can't get all of them, I don't think. But
well, maybe they can, Max. I mean, who's to say they can't? I mean, Ivan Toney seems an obvious purchase.
When he can't play.
He can't play. So
ideal for Chelsea.
Absolutely perfect. But at least they'll hone him and somebody else won't. Or everybody else won't. I'm not sure what's going on there. It's either some fiendishly clever scheme or absolute lunacy. It is interesting that they're able to splurge. If the rumours that they're signing Cole Palmer are true, and there's every chance they may have signed him by the time this pod is released into the world, that will take their spending under the new regime on transfers to over £1 billion, which is a lot of money by any standards. And they've recently upset their travelling fans, who are the hardcore of the support, by removing a £10 bus subsidy that will cost them £250,000 a season. It seems such a misstep and a PR disaster.
It's insane,
amazing,
isn't it?
Amazing.
But they obviously don't care about their travelling fans, and you have to wonder why. Maybe they're deliberately trying to antagonise their travelling fans because when things start to go wrong, as they have done in the last year or so, it's those fans who will be the most vocal and have the most influence. So if they, treat them with contempt, it's clearly not about the money, and it's clearly a minor brushstroke in a much bigger picture, but it seems to be a statement, we don't care about you, and, you know, we're taking your tenner bus subsidy off you, so suck it up.
Give us your bus fare. It's like a school bully. It seems mad. Can you, Lars, put any rationale to the footballing? Is it just Pochettino likes these players, doesn't like these players? And because where's Cole Palmer going to play? I mean, that's exactly the position they've got, like a bunch of players already.
They don't have actually that many. I think this is the thing. When I see all these memes on the internet going, oh, Chelsea, they've got so many players. People got to bear in mind, they have actually let a few go. Now, in no particular order, they've sold Kai Havertz, Mason Mount, Mateo Kovacic, Kalidou Koulibaly, Christian Pulisic, Edouard Mendy, Robin Loftus-Cheek, Ethan Ampadu, Romelu Lukaku has gone out on loan. So has Kepa Arrizabalaga, and N'Golo Kante has left. Cesar Azpilicueta has left. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang has left. Hakim Ziyech has gone out on loan. Lewis Hall as well has gone, and as has David Attrib Fofana out on loan. Bakayoko, who incredibly was still there, has left. You know, a lot of guys has left this football club. And I did this last week. I actually sat down and looked at the players they have and tried to sort of set them up. And they have pretty much two players for each position, which is what all ambitious Premier League clubs end up with. And Cole Palmer, I mean, if you look at he'll be part of that sort of... the formation at Chelsea seems to be, broadly speaking, a sort of 3-4-3 thing, though, with one of the wing-backs so far forward, blah, 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 blah. But they have two players behind... The striker, Raheem Sterling, logically would be one of them. When he's fit again, you'd think Nkunku would be the other. But for that spot, it's sort of Madueke, Chukwueke, I guess, can play there. But there's not like a ton of players lining up to play that role anymore, because they've let quite a few of them go. So I guess the thinking is he'll get minutes in that sense. And broadly speaking, I'm sure short-term there might be some potential FFP issues here. But big picture-wise... You know, younger players are almost always less expensive than you think, because their wages are usually lower and you spread the cost over a longer period of time and they have a potential sell-on value. Whereas older players with high wages are always much more expensive to the club than you think. So it does seem a bit mad, and it's possible they've gone too big on this, but I think the principle of making the squad younger, trying to bring the wage bill down, getting rid of the slightly older high earners that they had on the books... It does make some kind of sense. And then the question is, can Pochettino turn them into a team and a squad that, as Wilson has pointed out, is a little bit short on experience, is a little bit short on leaders? That's the real question here, I think.
Mm. And will he get the time to do it, given how young the players are? Just a note on that that bus, stealing your bus fare. The Chelsea Supporters Trust has decided to part fund the cost of away travel to Bournemouth on this one occasion. They'll subsidise the cost from the quoted £29 to £10 to highlight the appalling decision and to give the club additional time to fully reassess the feedback received from user groups. It appears that during a cost of living crisis, Chelsea FC are happy to increase the financial burden on many supporters by penny pinching. The club have been approached for comment. Other rumours, obviously, on Monday, we'll talk through the real highs and lows of the transfer window. Bayern Munich are interested in Conor Gallagher. Callum Hudson-Odoi has gone on loan to Forest. Was Chelsea Forest, was that the game that Chelsea finally won when Lampard hadn't won any football matches? I can't remember. Because I remember looking at their games going, well, Forest at home is the game they should win.
It's something that Chelsea have done in the transfer market, and it's something that City are doing with Cole Palmer, which is you sell off your young players. And this is something I plan to write about for the paper, which is about how... The FFP market, maybe it's the fact that that COVID leeway has come to an end, but clubs have suddenly started looking for a way to increase their FFP, and it just seems that they're all cashing out young players because they're pure profit on this balance sheet, profit and loss, whichever one it is. And so a player like Cole Palmer, who clearly, by the sounds of it, thinks he needs a move to get a place in the team, or a player like Lewis Hall, are just cashed out for these big sums when they've barely played much football. And it's like, and it just seems that football transfers are like this movement of young players. And I'm a bit uncomfortable because, as far as I remember, the best teams are those teams where a club's youth team has come together with other star players and produced and pushed to win things. And you think about Barcelona, you think about AC Milan in the 80s, you think about Manchester United, you think about Liverpool, who was a slightly different thing, where they actually bought young players from around the lower divisions and moved them in. That is completely gone now. What a club like Chelsea is trying to win things with another club's young players, where they've got loads of young players.
Yeah, I was about to say then, you know, if that carried on, if you're like an academy player at sort of 14, 15, you want to go to a club that you don't want to play for, right? You want to go to a really good academy, but at a club you don't want to end up at because you're going to be sold for FFP reasons when you're 18.
And that just seems to what happens. And, you know, like Chelsea for years under Roman Abramovich, one of the ways that they, you know, nudged and nurdled their way through FFP was to sell young players. There's that golden generation of players, you know, Tammy Abraham was one. But now it's gone supernova. And even Manchester City are doing it. They're selling a goalkeeper, James Trafford, 15 million, who has not played a game for them. And it's just this underlying market. That's what the market at the moment is underpinned by these deals. I find it weird, and I find it strange that clubs should be so willing to cash out young players. And I wonder it's whether the football are not owned by people who are local, and so because of globalisation, young players are just seen as an asset rather than something to be the spirit of a club.
Yeah. Liverpool Villa, Baz, is it ridiculous to suggest Liverpool cash in on Mo Salah?
I don't think so, no. The money, the figures being bandied about are astronomical. They could certainly do with keeping him. Jurgen Klopp wants to keep him. I don't know if he wants to go or not. We have seen other clubs sell very good players and improve. West Ham are a case in point. Brentford haven't sold Ivan Toney yet, but they haven't got him, and they're as good, or if not better, than they were before he was suspended. Obviously, it's early doors yet, but I don't know what Liverpool fans, how they would react if Salah goes in the next day or two, whatever. Clubs can quite happily survive with the loss of big star name players.
Have Liverpool had the best of Salah? You'd have to say at this point, probably yes, because he's been brilliant. He's been a top three player in the league for the last 5-6 years. Are they going to get him better than that? I suspect not, because he's sort of on the way down a little bit. Do you cash out? If you're going to do business with Saudi Arabia, then why not sell him? And try and rebuild, because that's what the club needs, is more money in to buy the players. Though I suppose one of the things that Jurgen Klopp's complained about is the fact the Saudi window closes later and that he won't have those funds to spend.
It closes on the 7th September. Some outlets report it to be as late as the 20th. You get the feeling they could just decide when they want it to close, couldn't they? You know.
I'm just saying England could also do that. I mean, it's up to you when you close your transfer windows. I mean, it's no more or less sneaky. It's just the way it is.
Is that right? It's not Europe wide.
No.
Okay.
It's just that it doesn't make sense to close before or after the rest of the countries you usually do business with. Because they tried that like 1 year in the Premier League and say, we're going to close it before the season starts. And it turns out closing it while the rest of Europe was active for a few more weeks was a terrible idea. Just put the clubs in a really bad position. It'd be probably better for the game if just everyone around Europe sort of decided to close it. But you do run into the issue of the leagues not all starting at the same time, and it's hard to coordinate these things.
Mark says, regarding Van Dijk's forthcoming suspension for his red card against Newcastle, and he's been charged by the FA for being angry about it afterwards, can't Klopp simply go round to the referees' HQ and apologise? Then we all forget it ever happened. You know, like what regularly happens when referees make a mess of things. It's a nice question. Burnley Spurs. Gilly says, opinion on Spurs putting out reserve side for the League Cup last night. I thought with no Europe on the cards this year, it was a good opportunity for them to go all in on cup competitions. First mistake from Ange, in my opinion, Lars.
The League Cup is like the what's it called? The room of requirement in Harry Potter. Like, it is exactly what you want it to be. Like, if you go far in the League Cup, it's really important. And it's a cup competition, and it's a chance to win a trophy, and it's really important and great and fantastic. If you go out early, it's just, whatever. No one really cares about that tournament, and it gives you more time on the training ground to focus on the stuff that matters. There is a case to be made that, because they're not in Europe, Tottenham, those extra games wouldn't have been a problem for Tottenham this season. And it was a chance for them to you know, to maybe get to a final and to win a trophy, albeit one that's less important, but a trophy still, and that it should have been embraced a little bit more wholeheartedly. But they have a big squad. They have squad players who, you know, who you want to give game time to. So most clubs rotate in the cup. And when they win, it's fine. And when they don't, it shows the terrible lack of priorities and the lack of winning mentality and all the rest of it. I don't know. It's just kind of how it goes.
Richarlison scored a goal, so I suppose that's good for him. Bayern Munich apparently want Eric Dier. They can't want Eric Dier, can they?
Bayern didn't link with types of weird and wonderful Premier League players. It just Thomas Tuchel really did enjoy himself over here, didn't he? I'm just wondering that, you know, does he still watch Match of the Day or something like that? Because he really does, he loves his Premier League players, doesn't he?
Well, he won't have seen much of Eric Dier if he's still watching Match of the Day.
Well, very good, very good.
I think it was I don't know what you think, Max. I'd be interested to hear your opinion as someone who's a Spurs fan, who's your big team who wins things but consistently doesn't win things and now won't win this year's League Cup. But I thought nine changes was a bit excessive, and what Ange said before the game and what he said after the game didn't really tally, you know. I reckon Spurs fans are probably not happy at being out of, let's face it, possibly the only competition they have a half reasonable chance of winning before the end of August. It's not good.
I think I'm just so in love with Ange that I agree with whatever he says whenever he says it. And so I've lost all sense of objectivity. But they were pretty flat in that game. Fulham played pretty well and probably should have won it before it went to penalties.
Is that nine changes sounds really drastic, but if you look at the lineups, it's not as if the team was like full of goofy weirdos that should be nowhere near the first team. I mean, it is players who are all involved usually. It's not like a bunch of kids he played. He played the guys who are second choice, mostly in their positions. And
yeah, I think he just took a gamble and it lost.
Okay.
He could, you know, it was only penalty shootout defeat against a good team.
Yeah, and look, Fulham have had a good week, haven't they? They go to City, so that might be the end of their good week, but you never know. Palace play Wolves. Palace beat Plymouth 4-2 in the League Cup. They were 2 down. Wolves hammered Blackpool 5-0.
We're going to be at Palace Wolves, which is a game we went to last season. And you realise how quickly certain things change in the Premier League, because less than a year ago, the manager was Patrick Vieira. The other manager was... It was actually the interim guy between Bruno Lage and Lopetegui. I can't remember his name. The classic...
interim guy.
He was like one of the coaches.
And Terry Connor. No, I know. He was Steve. Was it Steve Davis? He was one.
Yeah,
was
Steve,
like
Steve
really,
Davis.
He was absolutely delighted to be there, wasn't he?
Yeah, but it's one of those classic things where after the match, someone always asks the caretaker the job. You know, do you want the job full time? And it's like as if this guy is going to get the job. And you know, with the greatest respect, I'm sure he's a wonderful coach and like the absolute. You know, bedrock of Wolves, that is never going to happen. And of course, they brought in Lopetegui. But now we have Roy's, you know, South London swinging entertainers against Wolves, who are they as bad as we thought they were going to be? I mean, Gary O'Neill has that sort of grit, doesn't he? And yeah, Nunes was a player linked with Liverpool at the start of last season, wasn't he? And I think they went pretty hard for him, didn't get him. And then he scored like one goal.
Yeah, one goal, one assist in 34 games. Pep's described him as one of the best players in the world. I think they've accepted a bid of 48 million.
Okay, listen.
They're Mope numbers, aren't they? They're Mope numbers.
Yeah, well, the thing is, is this one of these Pep experiments where it's like, I can make this guy one of the best players in the world and I will show you this through my genius, the bloke who looked... okay at Wolves, obviously very skillful, but no end product. Because the thing is, I had a City fan asking me, because they've sold Gundogan, they're beginning to panic. Manchester, this is how football works these days. Because they've sold Gundogan, Manchester City fans are beginning to panic that they're worrying about where all their goals are going to come from. That's Manchester City fans, remember. They've got this lad up front. He might help you out the few. They've got Julian Alvarez. They've got, we didn't go through the list of them, but they're saying, well, is this guy going to get some goals for us? Lars maybe has, is his job going to be to get the goals? Or is it, because they seem to have moved between the midfielder that they want, to move between like a defensive midfielder, and then they were trying to get Paqueta. Do they know what type of player they're trying to get there?
Yeah, so I think it's really hard to judge Nunes because he's a very technically gifted player who's played for a quite bad team that has really no semblance of a cohesive attacking structure of any kind, really. It seems to be just kind of dribbly boys trying to dribble people and do something. I can completely, like, in my mind's eye, and giving him a bit of slack because he is clearly a genius, I can see why Guardiola thinks if I put this guy into a system that works, where we actually have the ball quite a lot and get the ball in good positions, this guy has the technical skill to both fit into that system and be useful in it. But I do agree that it's a bit of a leap. But I still think when it comes to giving people benefit of the doubt in their judgment of players, Guardiola is one of those who I think has kind of earned the right to be for a little bit of trust.
Who was the last flop? I can't think of one.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. No, I know exactly. And similarly with Jeremy Doku, like in terms of goals and assists, I don't think his numbers are incredible, but he's an incredible dribbler who will add a little bit of something that they lost when Mahrez left. Someone who can be a little bit unpredictable and break the pattern a little bit. I think he can do that. So, you know, they're interesting additions. And City's first 11 is already really good. It's just that the depth isn't amazing anymore. So they want guys who can come and play, you know, 15 games a season or whatever and do a job and have an impact now and again. And, you know, I agree we haven't seen that much at Wolves, but I can imagine Nunez slipping into that kind of role.
Are there grounds for concern over his professionalism and attitude? Because he was very good against Manchester United. I think it was the next game he got sent off for two absolutely stupid bookings. And now he's on strike, or he's been on strike for the last week or so. If I was Pep, I'd be looking at that going, do I, you know, if he's behaving like that at Wolves, who's to say he won't behave like that here?
Power to the people. Strike action is a vital part for all the workers, Barry. At The Guardian, no less, you should know that. So I stand with Matthias Nunes.
Okay, fair enough.
Anyway, that'll do for part two. Part three, we will look at the Champions League qualifiers.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Rangers are out of the Champions League. They lost 7-3 in aggregate to PSV, 5-1. Lars watched it, so you didn't have to.
I also watched it, so everyone didn't have to.
Remember, I watched it and Sky asked me to have put the parental lock code in to try and...
stop you watching it.
I got in. It was horrible what I saw.
Was it?
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say, was it 1, 2, 3, 4? Your parents put on for Rangers games. The only thing I saw, Lars, was
that's my mum. Yeah.
Conor Goldson's no look own goal, which is one. It's sad that there was no real close up of his face. It is an absolutely priceless bit of football, Lars.
I mean, even just the. You're 4-1 down in that sort of situation. Why are you doing a no-look back pass? That's on the frame as well. It's like the first thing they teach you with the back pass, not put it between the posts. I know he was pretty far back, so Butland would have to shift diagonally pretty quickly if he put it on the other outside of the post. But it is just, yeah, a no-look back pass between the posts is just your... There's so many things going wrong there in terms of things you should absolutely never do.
And he kind of dinked it. He kind of like sort of... It wasn't a chip, but like the way he kicked the ball was also, it was very flamboyant. I mean, to be honest, Barry, I'm all for it when you're 4-1 down. It's good to try things. Football's an entertainment business.
Yeah, I'm not sure the travelling Rangers fans would agree. I mean, this 5-1 really flattered Rangers. They got absolutely torn apart in this game, and it could have been double figures. PSV missed a lot of chances. Jack Butland, who I didn't actually know was at Rangers, that one passed me by, made several very, very good saves. And so Rangers go into the Europa League, and on the evidence of that performance, it's probably the best place for them, because the financial benefits aside, you'd worry about what might happen to them if they had got into the group stages. They obviously have they host Celtic at Ibrox this weekend in the league, so it could a bad week could get a lot worse for Rangers.
So that's a battle of Joe Hart and Jack Butland. So where do promising goalkeepers of 2010-2011 go? Well, the answer...
Presumably Rob Green is on the bench for one of them. Yeah. Right? That's got to be the case. Lars Mulder, unlucky against Galatasaray.
Incredibly unlucky. Galatasaray in the second half here were an absolute shambles. They couldn't run. I mean, I sent a message to our mutual friend Andy Brassel, who's like interested in Turkish things, and was like, what did they do in preseason, these guys? They were just completely empty in the second half of this game. And if Mulder had a little bit more cutting edge going forward, they would have punished them, but they weren't able to do it. And in the end, you know, Galatasaray go through winning the game on a deflected free kick and a Mario Icardi penalty in the first half. So this is very, very jammy stuff from Galatasaray to get through here. Very frustrating for us people from the north.
Deadman says, did you let James Richardson into Guardian Towers when he left the podcast? Or did you stop him at the front door so he couldn't say goodbye or collect his things? This is according to the Telegraph that Tottenham wrote an email to Harry Kane, harrykane@hotmail.com, it's got to be, that it would not be appropriate for him to return to the ground before completing the move. It is believed that Ange Postecoglou and the Spurs players have since said their goodbyes to Kane on the phone. But it's like a one big FaceTime that they all sat there and went, what, just waved? Everybody waved.
Common practice, though, in the harsh world of big business, though, that isn't it? You know, your passcode doesn't come in, you know. That's it.
I think the club did say, you know, Harry Kane is always welcome here, but clearly not then. Clearing me up now. Great news that the Bath City striker Alex Fletcher made his first appearance after suffering that serious head injury when he collided with a concrete wall 9 months ago. He said, nobody will ever understand how many times I've played out the scenarios in my mind. The next time stepping back onto Twerton Park with the number 7 on my back, my next goal, my next win, it truthfully... what's been keeping me going throughout my entire recovery. My surgeon gave me the news that if I made it through the surgery, which was a slim chance as it was, I might not be the same person. I might not have use of my legs. I might not even remember my family because of where the impact was. It is worth, I retweeted it. It's worth digging out the moment that he came back on the pitch, because it was obviously quite emotional for him and the players and the fans and everyone. So look, good luck to him. Paul says, I very much enjoyed the revelation that Wilson's view on ghosts are outdated. Does this make him a proper ghost man? Can we expect an appearance soon on the spectral equivalent of Keys and Grey, presumably to disparage the electromagnetic tech used in modern ghost hunting? Thank you, Paul. A lot of people wanted to get in touch about me calling John the Baptist Jean le Baptiste. Tombo says, I know there are many more important things. I want to hear more about John the Baptist. Jim Plowman said, some slight damage to the man of the people image during the pod today, accidentally revealing that you only read a French version of the Bible featuring Jean le Baptiste. Biscam Bauer saying, my memory's failing me. Did John le Baptiste get many minutes for France? Honestly, I have no idea. Barry, I have no idea where... Well, I don't know why we were talking about John the Baptist, but why I started calling him John le Baptiste... Literally, why? Because Wilson suddenly went, John the Baptist, John the Baptist. I've done it again. I don't know what's happened to my brain.
Is it Didier Baptiste of, what was that TV program called?
Dream Team. I got muddled up. I got confused between John the Baptist.
The Bible and Dream Team. Yeah, easily
the
confused.
Precursor to Jesus.
Yeah. And,
Irish listeners will probably be aware of this, but when John Delaney, before he was, you know, bounced out of the Football Association of Ireland in disgrace. There's this sort of gossipy Sunday newspaper in Ireland called the Sunday Independent, and their showbiz journalist did this incredibly sycophantic puff video documentary on John Delaney, which was called John the Baptist rather than Jean le Baptiste. But I think you might be able to find it on YouTube, but it's just all these sort of Irish high society people fawning and gushing over what a great football administrator this man is. But yeah, I could never figure out why they called it John the Baptist, and maybe they should have called it Jean le Baptiste.
Finally, many people got in touch. There's this thing on social media called Fesshole, which I believe famous people confess, or just people confess to things. It's like, you know, let your secrets be known. And somebody yesterday wrote, I'm part of a small group that run a very successful podcast and have been going for a number of years. The truth is, I hate the subject we talk about now, but I feel stuck due to the income. Many people said, was this Barry? Barry, have you admitted your secrets to Fesshole?
No, I am aware that many people think this was me, and it wasn't. And the main reason being I wouldn't have done that is because the remuneration I get for this probably isn't as good as a lot of people think.
Anyway, that'll do for today's podcast. Thank you, Lars.
If anything, my crime is being too interested in the football max. As a transcript of our WhatsApp group might reveal.
Having managed to double screen Molde Galatasaray and PSV Rangers while simultaneously getting the highlights of the Carabao Cup second round, you're the hero we all need.
Molde was on Tuesday, but I'll take credit for that. If any credit you want to give me, justified or not. I mean, we didn't talk about Antwerp beating AEK Athens.
No, we didn't, and we're not going to.
But like, Toby Alderweireld and Tim Janssen. Vincent Janssen going into the Champions League.
I feel like this is where you should just fade Lars down. And then like 3 hours later.
Richie Dillat.
3 hours later, still. You could on, fade him up and he'd still be doing it. In fact, we all jump on a Zoom and do the podcast. Lars is just doing this all the time, and we just fade him up occasionally. Anyway.
Let's say Copenhagen.
Oh, God. Love you, Lars. Thank you.
See you guys.
Thanks, John.
Thanks.
Thanks, Barry.
Thank you.
Football Weekly is produced by Joel Grove. Our executive producer is Danielle Stevens.
This is The Guardian.